Hello, photography lovers. Glad to have you around. This is the Fashion Photography Podcast. And as usual, because I haven't changed it, my name is Still Virginia, and you're listening to the one and only show you can find everything you want and everything you need to learn about the fashion photography business. Last time, I was here with my guest, Nicole York. She's a photographer, and also, as you know from the title of this podcast, she's sort of like a Wonder Woman. And that's why today we're going to take a look at some big how-tos, like how to act on a set and how to achieve success and how to develop your own style. This is, by the way, a question that we get very, very often in our Facebook group, again called the Fashion Photography Podcast, that you can always join because it's free and it's cool and it's full of amazing people. And I think this is enough of advertising, and it's time for us to continue with the show and part number two of our podcast with Nicole York. To be a photographer, in my opinion, really is about being people's person. Because, for example, during the last workshop that I did, we had two different groups with six people in each group. The workshop was all about team working, because for me, that's very important. Especially, you know, when you work in fashion, you have different people with different roles. But it's all connected. So if somebody just skips their work, then you have more and more work to do. And the result is not the same. So it was very important during this workshop to work all together. And so actually for every photographer to take the role of the makeup artist, of the stylist. Yes, of course, they weren't doing makeup. They weren't picking the clothes. But they knew after the workshop how they need to give the time and what exactly does the stylists need to do. Because for many new photographers, it's very frustrating what they have to do. So some of the excuses that I heard a lot is, oh, yeah, I saw that. I cannot see the belt on the photo, but that's the job of the stylist. Why should I tell? And that's so wrong because, of course, they are sitting right next to you, but it's not the same. They are not seeing the same image.
Right.
Because they're next to you. They're not behind the camera. So it's kind of different. And it's, again, teamwork. So they all had to fill this. For example, some of the photographers, because, of course, everybody was like everything, as I told you.
Right.
All of them were also photographers. When they picked the role of the photographer, I said to them, you need to speak loudly so the people can actually hear you because not everybody in the team is sitting right next to you. Like, for example, your model.
Right.
Which is super important. And you need to speak loudly. You might be in all types of conditions. It could be hard for everyone to hear you. So you need to speak loudly and clearly. And some of the people said, yeah, but I'm so shy. I cannot scream, you know. Every time when I have to talk on parties, for example, I just don't have the voice to talk loud. It's like I'm screaming. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. And on the next day, I don't have my voice.
Oh.
Yeah, but if I have to go on a job the next day, of course, I'll try not to go on a party the previous evening. But if I have to go on a job the next day, I will do my best, but I'll talk as loud as all of my team is going to hear me. And trust me, I'm not a loud talker, usually. But on a photo shoot, it's not like that. So it's very important to have this people skills.
Right.
And at the same time, you cannot be shy when you're a photographer. I mean, you can be shy in your everyday life, but not during the photo shoot.
No, especially not if you're going to be working in that kind of arena. I think you might be able to be a fine art photographer and do things on your own or just with a model or a very small group. But if you're looking to work with a large team of people, you have, I think during this last summer, I had four models on set, the designer, the stylist, the makeup artist, the hairstylist, as well as assistants and the client. So I was responsible for moving a very large group of people around and making sure that everybody was where they needed to be. And here in Colorado, especially in the summertime, not only does it get hot, but it's very arid. So I'm chasing people around and making sure that people have sunscreen and they're drinking water and they've had something to eat. And also that the reflector is where it's supposed to be and somebody's holding the light stand. And you have to be willing to put that aside if you want to work in that arena where there's going to be ADs and other things on set
Yeah. I know it sounds like you need to be like a schizophrenic or something, but truly, I mean, during parties, I'm usually very quiet. Of course, if I want to talk, I can bring the whole crowd around me with some jokes and stuff like that if I want to. But usually I'm the observer. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, when I'm on a job, I have to show who's the boss because you know how much we carry as photographers.
Sure.
We have to be kind to everyone. We have to keep the good mood. And as you say, run around and make sure that everybody is feeling okay. But at the same time, if somebody skips their job, the final result is coming from us.
Right.
So we carry the whole production on our shoulders. So we have to make sure that everything is fine. And this was a good advice. Do you have any other advices for the people starting in the business and what they need to do in order to have this amazing work?
I didn't realize, or I guess I came to the realization in a roundabout way. And I think I'm maybe at a different place in my career if I had realized it sooner. And that would be to really spend time finding out why you want to do this kind of work. And what it actually is that success means for you. And also to spend a little bit of time figuring out what your voice is. And I think the question of voice comes with time and with working a lot. But since it took me so long to realize, I mean, I went through photographing weddings and families and babies and everything else before I realized that that wasn't really where I wanted to be. But I didn't know that at the time because I was having people ask me to shoot. And so I just thought, this is awesome. I could be a photographer because people will pay me. So they were coming to me and I thought, well, I can make a business out of this. And it wasn't until I was doing that as a business and turning over work to clients that was good work, but it never had my heart in it. And I did one very creative shoot with a family of some friends of ours who I thought, maybe if I can shoot the way I want and people will pay me for that, then I won't find this work so boring. And so we turned a family. We brought them to Neverland. I had Tinkerbell show up and make the kids float. And they went off to Neverland and became the Lost Boys. And I had so much fun. And the creativity, it really just fulfilled my creative side. And even past that point for me to realize where I really wanted to be. But if I had understood at the beginning of my career that I needed to have a vision and a voice, because I really think at a certain level, if someone is paying you for your work, then technical quality is expected. Mm-hmm. You had better have technique. I think there is an even playing field. Once you get to a certain point, everybody has the technique to be able to pull off great shots. But what everybody doesn't have is your unique approach to how you work and your experiences and how you view the world and what your vision is. And so that voice, I think if we spent a little more time cultivating our unique voices instead of borrowing things from Pinterest or spending so much time looking at other photographers that our work really gets colored by them, it's a lot easier to find an audience when they can connect emotionally to your work than when your work looks like it could be done by any other photographer. I think my one big piece of advice would be to really delve into what makes you tick photographically, whether that's really hard light and graphic images or soft romantic images with hazy diffuse light, or if it's a theme that you really are constantly working through, or whatever it is that is the heart of your voice. I think I would say learn that and cultivate that. And really try to live in that, because the technique always comes over time. It can't help but build if you're doing the right things. But voice really does have to be cultivated purposefully. Since that's the one unique thing that you have, cultivate that and really work on your artistic voice.
The so-called style that everyone is looking for.
Yes, 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 the so-called style. I mean, you will never mistake a Paolo Reversi image for a Peter Lindbergh shot.
Sure.
You will never mistake these photographers that we idolize. They live in that style. And it's because they know, if you listen to Peter Lindbergh speak, you'll know exactly why he shoots the way he shoots. Mm-hmm. He has a very strong purpose behind why he does that. So if we can spend more time and energy on that, photographers who are just starting out will find themselves where they want to be a lot faster than those of us who've stumbled over it and didn't realize what we were doing until we went, oh, I have no style. I better do something about that.
Was this the hardest lesson you've learned so far?
That comparing myself to the photographers I admire is a recipe for disaster emotionally. I think that one, because having someone who you want to emulate as far as maybe their work ethic or the style of work they do, in that a lot of people really would love to shoot the way that Annie Leibovitz shoots. I think having somebody that you aspire to is fantastic, but then at the same time, you can look at people whose work you admire, and it may be a celebrity or it might be a friend, whoever it is, and then you compare yourself to them. And if they're doing the things you want to do and you're not doing them for whatever reason, maybe you haven't gotten to that place technically yet, or maybe they really know who they are as an artist and you're still figuring that out, and you're looking at their work and their clients and all of these things, and you're saying, how come I'm not doing what they're doing? Or maybe they had the good fortune to assist somebody who is very well placed, and so they have connections now because of that, and you don't have the connections, and so you feel terrible, and all of those things. I think that it will steal all the joy out of your work if you allow yourself to do that. And I have to remind myself often that each of us is coming at this job from a different place. We all are coming from a unique life experience, a unique background. There's a photographer here in Colorado Springs who has had many, many health issues, but he still works every chance he gets. And it's incredibly inspiring because he's doing everything he can do with what he has. He doesn't have the same life experiences and issues that I have. And so it would be unfair for either of us to look at each other and say, well, why am I not doing what they're doing? Because I'm also balancing a separate career and my home life and my family. And somebody else might have nothing but their own time to work on what they're doing. Someone else might be dealing with health issues. You never know where somebody else is coming from, and you never know the amount of hard work and the obstacles they had to overcome and what it took for them to get where they are. So I definitely would say that is the hardest lesson that I have to learn. And I think I relearn it every day and remind myself every day not to torture myself that way, but to just be grateful for the journey that I've had and that I'm going through. To just appreciate the work of the people I admire for what it is without trying to use it as a measuring stick for my own.
I truly believe that's the right mindset, because if you're wasting your time to compare yourself with other people, which is very common nowadays, because I truly believe it's simply because we have access to everybody's work. It wasn't like this before. I know that people had to wait for a magazine to receive from another country for months. But then, that's my belief, that people then appreciated more those pictures, more the information received. Because nowadays, we're just swiping, and we're seeing so many images that might truly be valuable, but we're not giving them the credit because we are overflowed with images.
Right.
As you mentioned, our colleague with the health issues, it just reminded me of a story that I recently saw on the TV about a photographer from Bulgaria, from a very, very small village that's been shooting simply because he's super in love with the photography. He's been shooting for ages and he does not have hands.
Yeah.
So if you just take a look at the images, you see portraits, you see landscapes, you see all that stuff. And probably if you don't know the story behind these photos, you're going to be like, okay, I've seen portraits before. But if you know the story, everything gets so different. So the good part of our century is that we actually think a lot more about the story behind the photo. And I think this is very exciting.
Yes.
But talking about comparing, it's truly a waste of time because people are trying to compare themselves with some very, very big names.
Sure.
And we both know that behind those names, you have amazing teams.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you don't have the team, even if you have all the equipment, even if you're at the same location, it's probably not going to work.
Right.
I don't talk about the exact same team, but like a good amount of people that are very good at their job.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, since you mentioned that you travel a lot because of your husband's profession,
mm-hmm.
how do you find new teams?
That is one area where online resources can be invaluable. And I've been lucky in that I've had contacts all over the world, and I pay special attention to that kind of thing when I know I need to move. So, for example, before I came down here to Colorado Springs, I had mentioned that I would be going in that direction, and I immediately started to look for people that I thought would be good resources. Instagram was one of the places that I looked. I wanted to see if I could find boutiques in the area that were of the right size and might have the right kind of style mm-hmm. that they could be willing to loan clothing for shoots. I found a place, and so I thought they had a really great stuff. And when I got down here, I walked into the store, I checked them out in person, I bought some earrings, I chatted with the gals who worked at the desk, and then I said, I'm new to the area, I'm photographer, and if there would be a way to speak to the owner about potentially collaborating on shoots, I'd love to have the chance to talk with them. And so in that way, beginning with the social media platform, I was able to build a contact for myself. I've worked with her several times now, and she's been an amazing contact to have because she's already immersed in the business community here. And so she's been able to put me in contact with other people who are in the business community here. And then I had another friend who I just happened to have a contact with on Facebook through similar interests and groups that we were in. And when he saw that I was moving, he said, hey, I've got a friend down in the area you're going to. Her name is Kim Clay. She's a makeup artist, and I think you guys would be a great fit. And so through his introduction, shortly after getting to the area, I was able to meet her, and she became a great friend of mine. And I actually co-own a studio space with her now. So just by starting in one place and knowing what you need, I knew that I was going to need contacts with makeup, hair, styling, things like that. I knew I was going to need to be able to source clothing if I was going to do any kind of editorial shoots. By taking that information and then just directly applying it, by taking the initiative, I was able to get in contact with those people. And then I think it's always a great thing to test with those kind of people a little bit first, just to make sure that everybody is on the same page, that all the personalities work well together, that everybody's comfortable in a collaborative environment. I would have difficulty working with a makeup artist if I was going to give them feedback on what I thought would work best for the shoot, and they were just to shoot me down and to say, well, this is my artistry, and that would be really difficult to make work on set if it's a collaboration for portfolio work. And with everybody, I'm sure if my makeup artist wasn't able to tell me the light is really blowing out all of the color in this eyeshadow, is there anything that we can do because that purple needs to stand out? And then I would, oh, absolutely. If I can get feedback from that with my team and we can all collaborate together, then I feel like the end images always turn out better. So being able to test with those people and make sure that we all work together well and that the environment is really comfortable. And that's an important thing for me. I don't like having people come to work with me in an environment that is not fun and open and collaborative and comfortable, because I think you get your best work from people when they feel like they're in a place where they're valued.
Mm-hmm.
Once those contacts were made and then a few tests were done, and now I definitely have people down here that are my go-to people that I will contact first every time, because I know working with them brings out the best in me.
That's awesome. You're constantly surprising me though.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, with the studio. I did not expect that. And
yeah.
And the army truly blew my mind. No, for real. For how long have you been in the army?
I actually joined my junior year in high school, began training then, and finished my senior year, and then went to training afterwards. So for about almost 4 years, I was actually in training during September 11th, and my oldest son was born in Germany when I was stationed there. So my husband and I were part of the same brigade combat team, and we were set to deploy to Iraq together during the second wave. I had a 4-month-old baby. I had to make a decision on whether I was going to go overseas or take care of my son. And it was the most difficult decision I've ever made in my life. I was a medic. I think I'll always carry some guilt for not going to take care of my soldiers. But during that time, there was a distinct possibility that not both of us would come home, my husband and I. And I wasn't certain that I could live with that. So luckily, I had an amazing unit who was able to kind of facilitate that for me. And I was able to get out and stay home with my son. And looking back on it, I think it was the right decision, because my husband even said, you know, things were so crazy at that point in time, he probably could not have done his job if he knew I was in danger as well.
Wow.
So being able to have me support him from home, I think made that deployment easier for him. And then I was also able to be there for my son. So
amazing story. So you've been a medic?
Yes. Yeah.
How do you do that? Aren't you supposed to study for a medic?
I did when I was in
training. Oh my God, seriously?
Yeah, when I was in training, that was
how. You're killing me.
how we learned to take care of people in San Antonio, Texas. We basically walked out of training as EMTs.
You are truly the Wonder Woman. How the hell do you do that?
When you live your own life, it doesn't seem that impressive, I guess. You know, it just seems like part of your story. So
probably.
I guess I never really thought about it.
It's super hard for me to make my trailer for YouTube, because I'm like, yeah, but if people have to get to know me, they need to know this and this and this. And the trailer is going to freaking turn into like a movie
like
or
a
something.
Documentary about your life.
Yeah. But now when I'm listening about your life, I'm like, whoa, seriously.
Oh, that's funny.
That's amazing. And do you know what's the most amazing part, guys? You're only listening to her, but I know the way she looks, and she looks like she's 24. I don't know how old she is, but
I'm
for
35.
Real. That's super amazing. Wow. Seriously, you're amazing.
Oh, thanks. I'm flattered. And like I said, when it's your life, you don't consider the fact that how it might seem to somebody else when you've lived it. I guess it just seems like everyday normal life.
I guess so. For you. Let's go back to the photography. After all these amazing things that you have been done, have you ever studied about photography? And how did you learn photography?
When I first started, I had a little Sony CyberShot. I think it was maybe 5 megapixels or something like that.
Probably.
Probably. And like I said, I was, you know, I was taking pictures of bees. I believe if you look on photo.net and under Nicole Renee, or even if you look on photo.net and Google Nicole York, you'll probably see some of my early stuff. I began with that and just taking pictures of things, and then through critique and different things. I think having started, you know, I drew and painted, and I always loved art and movies. And so I think having started from there, I had an idea generally of where I wanted to go. I just didn't quite have the technique yet. And so the critique from other photographers was immensely helpful. And then after that, I had a friend who asked me to photograph her wedding. So I did the thing we all tell other photographers not to do. I shot a wedding with no experience, but knowing that it was coming up, I started buying books and I started doing research, and I talked my husband into using our income tax return to buy a little, it was a Canon Rebel. Mm-hmm. I talked him into that, and I said, you know, if I'm going to do this, I don't want to let her down. She didn't have money to hire a photographer in any case, but still, shooting someone's wedding is a big deal. So I bought myself books and I read all the books I could read, and I went and shot that wedding, and thank goodness it was not god awful. It turned out well, all things considered. And then I worked for a little while after that. I would do photo shoots for friends or things, and was slowly learning what I was doing. And then I had been shooting for, I think, 5 or so years. When a friend of mine had been going to the Art Institute, and she was like, you should do this, blah, blah, blah. And so I thought, okay, I'll do that. I spent a year with the Art Institute, and that was at the time when they were still a for-profit organization. And so really anybody who wanted to try to learn could get in the door. But unfortunately, what that meant was for those of us who had already progressed a certain amount, what we were learning was kind of useless, because the things they were teaching were things that I already knew. Mm-hmm. So I dropped out after a year, still paying those student loans, by the way. I dropped out after a year, and I'm a little bit of an autodidact. So I will teach myself everything I can. And I will also jump into any information I find and just go down the rabbit hole. So I spent time on Creative Live and YouTube and with books. anything I could get my hands on to teach myself as much as possible, I have done it. So I have tutorials from everywhere that I've watched and then went to practice. And so really, I guess self-taught would generally be learning everything on your own, but I'm definitely self-motivated when it comes to being inquisitive and learning things. So I just found all the information I could find and from any source I could find it, really.
And the good thing is that you're also providing some very useful info.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Creative Live is an invaluable resource. I value the fact that I was able to get so much from there, especially during their free period when the tutorial is first being released. Mm-hmm. Being a young mom and having kids, I didn't really have a lot of money to invest in education. And so having a resource like Creative Live, where these fantastic photographers are sharing their knowledge, and I was able to get that at no cost to me. I would love to teach on Creative Live someday just to be able to give to other people the kind of value I was able to get from that platform.
I completely understand your desire.
Yes. Yeah. It's an amazing thing. So
it is. I've also learned a lot thanks to them. And even sometimes when I know what they're talking about, they kind of get to bring this type of professionals and creatives that are so easy to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? It's super nice.
Absolutely. Yes. I remember the first time I listened to Sue Bryce and I was like, oh, I could listen to this woman talk forever. At one point when I was trying to have a traditional career in photography, shooting families and things, I was shooting a family for $200 with all of the images and a gallery. And I thought I was doing all of these really great things and not understanding why I had no money, even though I was doing all of this work. I was absolutely terrified to do it, but I spent my last $200 on her education class, and just being able to listen to her experiences and her insights and everything, it completely changed the way that I saw my own value as a photographer. And that was a huge turning point for me in understanding that what I do had value and my time is worth something. And if I'm willing to work for somewhere like McDonald's for minimum wage, then I sure as hell should be willing to work on my own and get paid for my time and what I do. I can't say enough about platforms like that that really offer that to photographers, because it can completely change the entire trajectory of your career.
Now we definitely can tell that we know more about her story with the Army and also how to find new people to work with. If you have some gorgeous editorials waiting to be published, you can always check out JudeFashionMagazine.com and NeverlandMag.com, where you can take a look at their submission guidelines, but you can also listen to all of our previous podcasts. You can do it also on our amazing new website called PhotographyPodcast.net. There we have a little preview of every one of our guests' work, and you can dive deep. I'll see you next Wednesday with the last part of our interview with Nicole. But before that, don't forget to come over for our Friday podcast.